All right, let's jump into a case today that really flips the script when it comes to product liability.
Especially when you bring the government into the mix.
Exactly. And, you know, we always think, oh, a faulty product, someone gets hurt, the manufacturer's on the hook. But today's deep dive is going to show us that it's not always that simple.
Not at all.
We're talking about Boyle v. United Technologies Corp., a case that made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and this one has really had a lasting impact on the legal world.
So, to set the scene, what exactly are we dealing with here?
Well, this case really centers around a tragic accident involving a Marine helicopter co-pilot, David Boyle.
A helicopter accident, huh?
Ah.
Okay, so walk us through what happened.
So David was involved in a training exercise off the coast of Virginia, and his helicopter crashed. Now, the thing is, he survived the initial impact, but there was a problem with the escape hatch.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it turns out one of the control sticks, when pulled up in an emergency, actually blocked the co-pilot's access to the hatch.
So he was trapped.
Tragically, yes. And because of that design flaw, he drowned.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
I'm guessing his family decided to sue.
Absolutely. His father filed a lawsuit against United Technologies Corp., the company that manufactured the helicopter. The lawsuit claimed defective design under Virginia state law.
Makes sense. So did they win?
Well, initially, yes. The jury actually sided with the father and awarded him $725,000 in damages.
Wow. So case closed, right?
Not quite. UTC, the manufacturer, they appealed the decision.
Okay, so what happened next?
This is where things get really interesting. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, they actually overturn the jury's verdict.
What? How could they do that?
They introduced this thing called a military contractor defense.
Military contractor defense. Okay, I've never heard of that. What is that?
Well, the basic idea is that government contractors, under very specific circumstances, might actually be protected from liability.
So they can just get away with selling faulty products?
No, not exactly. It's more about whether they were just following the government's instructions or specifications.
So UTC argued they were off the hook for the escape hatch because they were just doing what the government told them to do.
Yeah, essentially. And the Fourth Circuit agreed with them, which obviously was a huge blow to the Boyle family.
So they appealed, right?
You bet they did. They took their case all the way to the Supreme Court.
Wow, so this little escape hatch issue turned into a major Supreme Court showdown.
It did. Because at its core, the case raised this massive question. Should federal law basically overrule state law in situations like this?
So could a state hold a contractor liable even if the feds gave them the green light?
Exactly. That was the big question.
Right. So drum roll, please.
Yeah.
What did the Supreme Court decide?
Well, in a 6-3 decision, they sided with UTC.
They did. Sure. So they basically said the government's involvement gets the manufacturer off scot-free.
It's a little more nuanced than that. The court upheld this idea of a military contractor defense.
Oh, okay.
But they also laid down some very specific criteria, a test that needs to be met for this defense to work.
All right, well, let's dig into that. What is this magical test?
The Supreme Court laid out what's now known as a 3-prong test. So, for a contractor to be shielded from liability, they've got to prove 3 things.
Okay, I'm all ears.
First, they have to show that the government approved reasonably precise specifications for the equipment. Second, the equipment actually conformed to those specs. And third, the contractor warned the government about any dangers they knew about in how the equipment would be used.
Hold on. So if the contractor knew something was dangerous but didn't speak up, they're still in trouble.
Exactly. No hiding behind the, well, the government told me to do it excuse.
Gotcha. So how did all of this play out with the escape hatch? Did UTC pass the test?
Well, that's where things get a bit murky. The Supreme Court didn't actually say definitively whether UTC met all 3 criteria in this specific case.
Wait, really? So what did they do?
They sent the case back down to the lower courts to be reevaluated using this new 3-prong test.
So they basically said, here's a new rule, now you guys figure it out.
Yeah, pretty much. But you know, even creating this test was a big deal.
I bet not everyone on the court was happy about it.
You're right about that. There were some strong dissenting opinions.
All right, well, let's hear it. Who dissented and why?
Justice Brennan led the dissenting justices. Their main argument was that the court had overstepped its bounds.
In what way?
They felt like the court was basically creating a whole new law. And in their view, that's Congress's job, not the judiciary.
So Brennan was saying, hey, if we're going to have this special defense, let the elected officials decide, not us judges.
Exactly. They saw it as a question for the legislature, not the courts.
This is getting really interesting. We're talking about separation of powers, government contracts, and the rights of individuals.
And we haven't even touched on the bigger implications of this decision.
Which I have a feeling are pretty huge.
You're not wrong. The Boyle decision has really left its mark on everything from vaccine development to space exploration. But that's a story for another time.
All right. Well, I'm already hooked. This is a deep dive I'm definitely going to keep thinking about. And for our listeners, we'll be back after a quick break to really unpack the impact of this landmark case and what it means for both government contractors and regular folks like us. Stay tuned. All right, so we're back. And before the break, we were really getting into Boyle v. United Technologies Corp. in that whole military contractor defense with its three-prong test. What I'm really curious about now is how this has all played out in the real world.
Yeah, the Boyle decision has definitely left its mark. Like you might expect, it's been a pretty big shield for contractors, making it a lot tougher for regular people to sue over design problems when the government's in the picture.
Can you give us some real-world examples of how this Boyle precedent has actually been used?
Sure. Think about vaccines, for instance. There have been cases where manufacturers weren't held liable for bad reactions because the government had approved the vaccine, both for use and how it was made.
That makes sense, especially during a health crisis. The government has a big role in saying, yes, this vaccine is okay, and getting it out there. So Boyle basically says, if the government signed off, the manufacturer isn't the only one to blame if things go wrong.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it goes beyond vaccines, too. Take space exploration. If a private company builds a spacecraft for NASA and something goes haywire, Boyle could protect that company if they can prove they followed NASA's instructions and told them about any potential risks.
Okay, so it's like a shared risk kind of thing where the government takes on some of the responsibility. But let's flip it around. What about the people who are harmed? Has Boyle made it nearly impossible for them to get justice?
It's definitely made it a lot harder. That three-prong test the Supreme Court came up with sets a pretty high bar for anyone trying to sue. They need to prove the contractor messed up on at least one of those prongs. The government didn't give clear enough instructions, the contractor didn't follow those instructions, or they didn't warn the government about a known danger.
So it's not completely hopeless, but it's a tough road for the victim. Proving that the government didn't give reasonably precise specifications sounds like a real headache.
You're telling me. And that's where a lot of the legal arguments have focused since Boyle. What does reasonably precise specifications even mean? How detailed do the government's instructions have to be? What kind of evidence can you use to show those instructions weren't good enough?
It sounds like a whole lot of lawyers arguing about tiny details.
It often is. These cases show just how complicated this area of the law is. That's why having a really good lawyer on each side is so important.
But let's take a step back. Does Boyle basically give the government a free pass to approve stuff that might be dangerous, knowing that the contractor won't be held accountable?
It's a valid concern. People who criticize the Boyle decision say it gives too much power to the government and weakens the whole idea of tort law, which is supposed to hold people and companies responsible for what they do.
So it's a tricky balance. We want the government to be able to work with contractors to create important things and new technologies. But we don't want to let people get hurt with no way to seek some kind of recourse.
That's the heart of the matter. How do we strike a balance between letting the government function and making sure someone's held accountable when something goes wrong?
Tough question. Have there been any attempts to change or clarify Boyle since the ruling came down?
There have been efforts to deal with those concerns, both through new laws and more court decisions.
Really? Tell me more about that. What kind of laws have people proposed?
Well, some lawmakers have put forward bills that would basically write the military contractor defense directly into law. That would make it super clear and maybe even expand it.
So instead of just relying on how the Supreme Court interpreted it, they want Congress to make it a hard and fast rule. I can imagine that's caused some controversy.
Oh, absolutely. The people who like these bills say they'd make things much clearer for contractors and encourage them to take on more government projects, even risky ones.
Yeah, if a company knows exactly what legal protections they have, they might be more willing to do those kinds of projects for the government.
Exactly. But people who don't like these efforts are worried about giving contractors too much immunity, which could put the public at risk.
So we come back to that basic tension, keeping the public safe versus letting the government do its thing.
That's right. It's a classic problem, and both sides have good points. Some legal experts think the courts should be the ones to fine-tune Boyle through new rulings instead of big, sweeping changes from Congress. They argue that judges are in a better position to look at the details of each case and apply the law fairly.
So they prefer a case-by-case approach instead of a one-size-fits-all law.
That's the idea. They think that would allow for more flexibility and keep up with the constantly changing world of government contracts and technology.
So the question is, who gets to decide? The courts or Congress? I'm sure there's no easy answer.
Definitely not. And it shows how important it is to stay informed about these issues because they can affect all of us.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, what are the key takeaways you want our listeners to walk away with?
I think the main point is that Boyle has had a huge, lasting impact on the relationship between the government, contractors, and the public. It's a messy situation with no simple answers, and the arguments about its effects are probably going to keep going for years to come.
Well said. Now, for those of you listening, we'll be right back after a short break to finish up our deep dive into Boyle v. United Technologies Corp. and leave you with some final thoughts. We're back, and we've been spending this episode digging into the ins and outs of Boyle v. United Technologies Corp., a case that has really made people rethink how government contracting and liability work.
Yeah, it forces us to look at that line between federal power and what rights individuals have, and where do the courts fit in versus lawmakers, and even how we define accountability in this world where technology is changing everything.
For our listeners who are lawyers or in law school, I bet this case is like a goldmine of legal stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Boyle is a cornerstone case when you're talking about government contract law and federal preemption. It comes up all the time in legal arguments and court decisions. It's still shaping how these kinds of cases are handled.
So let's say I'm a lawyer and my client got hurt by a product the government used. What are the big takeaways from Boyle that I absolutely need to know?
The first thing you got to wrap your head around is that three-prong test the Supreme Court came up with. Can you show the government didn't give specific enough instructions for the product? Did the contractor ignore those instructions? And really important, did the contractor know about dangers and not tell the government?
Okay, so I've got my checklist, those three prongs, but I imagine it's not always easy to actually prove that stuff.
You're right. Getting the evidence to back up those claims can be really tough. We're talking about digging into government records, technical specs, internal emails from the contractor, and you probably need experts to really explain it all.
So it's not just about knowing the law. You got to understand how the product itself works, too.
You got it. That's why you usually see whole teams of lawyers and technical experts working on these cases together.
But even if I can check all those boxes and prove those things, doesn't Boyle suggest that the contractor might still get off if the government was really calling the shots on the design?
That's what the military contractor defense is all about. It's basically shifting the blame and the potential costs over to the government.
But what if my client thinks the government was careless in approving a bad design? Can they sue the government directly?
Now that's where things get extra tricky. Suing the government is a whole different ballgame. There are special rules you have to follow and limitations like the Federal Tort Claims Act that can really tie your hands.
So it's not as easy as suing a regular company?
Not even close. Going after the government usually means dealing with a bunch of legal roadblocks.
Sounds pretty intimidating, both for the people who got hurt and their lawyers.
These cases are definitely tough. But it's important to remember that the legal system is always evolving. Boyle, as big as it was, isn't the end of the story.
So there's still room for different interpretations and even changes in the law down the road.
Absolutely. Courts are still wrestling with what Boyle really means, and new laws could completely change how we deal with government contractor liability.
Good reminder that the law isn't set in stone. It changes and adapts as things change around it.
Exactly. And if you really care about justice and holding people accountable, you gotta understand those subtleties.
I couldn't agree more. Well, we've covered a lot of ground today in this deep dive into Boyle v. United Technologies Corp. We hope it's been helpful and given you some things to think about.
It's been great to be here.
And to everyone listening, keep learning, keep asking those tough questions, and we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.